And this app allows you to track what needs to be done around your house and keep up with routine maintenance.
Sounds like a lot of pressure. Who needs the pressure, right?
Hi, everyone. We're so glad you joined us.
First, surviving a brutal attack. One man's remarkable story of transformation after a brain injury.
Next, a new trend, making money off that spare bedroom or finished basement whenever you want.
Then, sprucing up for the holiday season without spending big bucks.
Plus, learn about some extraordinary objects that do extraordinary things. Ever heard of the ambient orb?
And some cool new apps to brighten up the winter blues.
At 31, Jason Padgett was a futon salesman and a self-described party dude until a brutal mugging completely changed his life. Unlike most of the millions of people suffering from a brain injury, Jason acquired a new gift, a savant-like capacity for mathematics.
Jason chronicles his remarkable story of transformation in his memoir, Struck by Genius, How a Brain Injury Made Me a Mathematical Marvel. He joins us on the phone from Tacoma, Washington. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, Jason, describe Jason Padgett yourself before the brain injury.
I wasn't mean or anything like that, but I was very shallow. Like, basically, I went out every night with my friends just partying, drinking, chasing girls, and that was pretty much, like, the extent of life. Like, a stereotypical dorky guy, you know, just chasing girls, driving cars, and going to parties. And that went on literally for years. It went on like that.
Well, then, tell us what happened that fateful night 12 years ago at the Tacoma Karaoke Bar. What happened?
My friend Angela, she was on a date, a first date with this guy, and they called me. They'd had too much to drink, and they wanted me to give him a ride. And I lived close by, and it was a real rough neighborhood, but I drove over there. And I wound up singing a song, having a Coke, and then paid and left. And as we left, there was these two guys that had been singing karaoke that were in there, and they left behind us. And they looked nice and were dressed nicely and acting normal. And then literally they just attacked me from behind. I didn't see anything coming at all. The girl, Angela, did. She said that they came at me at a run. And from my perspective, all I saw was like this flash of light when the first guy hit me in the back of the head. It's like when you get knocked out, you see this little poof of white light. And the next thing I knew, I was on my knees just getting pummeled and kicked. And I was trying to figure out where I was, what was happening. I thought I was being attacked by a gang. I didn't even know where I was. It was so completely disorientating. I remember thinking and getting this dreading feeling that I'm going to die right now, beat to death on this street. And then that fight or flight thing came on. And for some reason, it was fight. And I grabbed one of the guy's legs. And I bit him on the inside of his thigh. Dirty fighting.
Good for you.
Yeah, and I grabbed his crotch and pulled him down to the ground. And then the other guy just started kicking me in the head and the back. Those were just the hardest blows. And then finally, he said, "Give me your damn jacket." And because we had probably fought for nearly a minute, and they hadn't said one word. So I ripped off this little cheap leather jacket that I was wearing, and by then it was already torn up, and they grabbed it, and they ran away.
So all that was over a leather jacket?
Well, we thought it was. I ran back into the restaurant and karaoke bar, and I asked, the girls were there, and I said, "Those guys were singing karaoke. Their names are on the karaoke slips, and their fingerprints are on those dishes. I need to call the police." And they said, "If you want the dishes and the slips, go look in the garbage cans and call 911 from someplace else." It so shocked me that I knew that they were protecting the guy somehow. So we went and got some people that ringed the restaurant that said, "Violent crime happens here. Ask us about it." And they caved instantly, and they came out and gave us the guys' phone numbers and addresses, and it turned out the two guys that robbed me were dating the girls that worked there. You would pay your bill, the girls would see if you had cash, and you get mugged by the boyfriends outside.
Oh, wow. My God.
But it was great. I showed up at their house with the police.
Oh, wow. So you weren't knocked out with all the beating and everything?
The only time I was unconscious was from standing to my knees. That's the only time I don't remember. And that was literally, I saw the flash of white light, and the next thing I was on the ground, and it was like your brain's going through reset. You're like, "Where am I? Who am I? Why am I here? Why am I getting hit?" I mean, it's really strange being knocked out, you know? It's just really weird. Even if it's just for a second, when you come to, you're completely disorientated.
Ooh. Well, after you were released, you were finally released from the hospital and you went back home, you say you knew something was different. What was different?
First, I thought it was the pain medicine, but the next day I knew it wasn't. Everything, instead of looking smooth, the best way I can think to describe it is imagine seeing individual picture frames. Like when we see something move, like a car drives by you, your eyes are taking snapshots of it, just like an old flip book where you would draw a picture and then flip the book and you see the little character move, even though it's just individual pictures. Well, our brain does the same thing, and there's a portion of our brain that all it does is smooth out the pictures that our eyes are taking so everything doesn't look like a flip book. And things now just look like a flip book, only much, much finer detail. So when anything moves across my field of vision, it has this slight jitteriness to it. Things that were round like clouds or water now have like tiny little straight lines around the round edges. The smoothness is gone like from everything. There is no smoothness.
And what about your newfound abilities? How did that come on, or how did you discover that?
Well, I started noticing that everything, I mean, it's weird. When you're seeing things without curves, it actually is forcing you to see exactly how calculus works. And I'm trying to think of how to do this without doing calculus. Because at the time, I didn't have any real math training. So I started drawing what I was seeing. Like when I would look at the rainbow, I'd say, oh, the rainbow, that looks like the number pi. And I drew it out. And then I would make up my own little equations for it and send it in to these different universities. And I'd get responses back like, what are you talking about? And finally, a physicist got me to go back to school and learn traditional math because he saw my drawings and he said, they look very, you know, mathematical, but you're not speaking our language, you're just speaking geometry. And once they got me back in school and in real math courses, it was amazing because it is the same thing. Calculus is just slicing anything that you're observing up into these smaller and smaller integrals or a finer and finer grid structure and then measuring the volumes of that grid and the area, et cetera. And when you see things as picture frames like I do, it's the exact same thing. So by being forced to see in picture frames, you're literally being forced to see and think as calculus does. It's amazing. What was amazing is not understanding that until I was in like Calculus 2 and it all, you know, finally it came together where I was like, wow, this literally truly is the exact same thing. So our brains are doing calculus. When somebody throws you a ball and you catch it, you know, you calculated how long it takes the nerve signal to get from your brain to your arms, then the four-dimensional coordinates of space and time to make your hand meet the ball and close. And if you did that as an equation, it would be a really hard equation, but yet you just, boom, catch the ball. So we're all doing it. It's in there, but it's just subconscious.
Wow, you're way above my pay grade already.
Sorry.
You're listening to the Two Boomer Babes, and we're talking with Jason Paget about the upside of what can be labeled a tragedy. He's the author of Struck by Genius, How a Brain Injury Made Me a Mathematical Marvel. I'm Barbara Klein, and my co-host is Kathy Bernard, and you can listen to the show anytime on the iHeartRadio app or at twoboomerbabes.com. Now back to our conversation with Jason Paget. Okay, so Jason, just to be clear, how much math did you have before the attack? Like, did you even know what calculus was?
I didn't even know that you could graph an equation. So when I went back to school, I took Math 99, and the first day she graphed an equation. It was like 4x plus 7, and it made this little line. And I was so excited. I still get excited thinking about it. Because I asked her, I go, you mean every equation can be graphed? And she's like, of course. And I was like, well, then you're talking about geometry, which is exactly what I'm talking about. We're just talking about it in two different ways. And so like when I had pi drawn out on a piece of paper, I had no way to prove it. But once I got to trig, I was able to prove it. And it really was what I thought it was.
Wow.
It's just I had my own weird language made up for it. Because really, no matter what equation it is that you're looking at, I mean, E equals MC squared, everything is always describing geometry in math and physics.
Well, I took all those classes and
yeah.
I never got that one. So kudos to you.
Well, I think it's because they teach it this hard way. Like, I've got a way that you can explain relativity and everybody gets it and it takes like 2 minutes. And you
really? Okay.
Literally, everybody, you'll understand parallel universes, things that you think are ridiculous, you'll totally get it, like, in 2 minutes.
But, Jason, so, in other words, you suddenly understood, like, theories and complex math and physics, which you were never taught. So it wasn't like you were remembering things, right, that you had previously learned. So how did the doctors explain this gift?
They did a functional MRI on me, and I went to Finland and also Sweden. And a functional MRI, what they do is it measures how much oxygen your brain is using and where. And So, like, if you are, for instance, you go inside an fMRI and you start to write with a pencil, since you're writing with a pencil, the part of your brain that controls writing starts to work a little bit harder, so it uses more oxygen, and they can see that tiny difference of oxygen usage in the machine. So they put me in there, and they flash hundreds and hundreds of pictures in front of my eyes, and every once in a while, an equation flashes up, too fast to solve it, but enough for you to see it. And then they watch what part of your brain starts to work when the equations pop up, and then they compare it to, like, control subjects to see what the difference is. And they found that I had access to areas of the brain that we don't have conscious access to when I'm doing math, and both the math part of the brain and the spatial part that work together, the visual cortex.
What was the official diagnosis?
Acquired savant syndrome and synesthesia.
Wow.
Synesthesia is like a blending of the senses. So there's some people that literally, like, the part there, when you breathe, you know, in your nose, molecules are going up in your nose, and your olfactory senses analyze it, and then your brain gives it a smell. Well, some people's brains are wired differently, so the molecules go up their nose, and then it goes to the part of their brain that analyzes sight. So they'll say, that looks like pizza when they're smelling it. They'll say that smells like blue.
Well, now, unfortunately, it wasn't all amazing and positive for you after the attack. What kinds of things did you suffer from as a result of your brain injury?
OCD came with it, and it was severe. I had post-traumatic stress, like, just horribly. I didn't leave my house for literally, like, 3.5 years because everything was so visually disturbing. I mean, even though it was beautiful, it was like going from one life to a completely different life and at a complete right turn from where I would have normally be. The OCD was just out of control. It's like your brain's on constantly, so you notice everything.
So what would you do that it was out of control?
I would literally, like, Lysol my money. And then after Lysoling the money, put it in the microwave for 30 seconds. And then make sure I wash everything in the kitchen. And then, oops, I think I forgot to wash that. And since I forgot to wash it, I better wash it again. And, oh, now that I touched it, I got to wash my hands. And when I washed my hands, did I touch that nozzle in this spot? You know, it's ridiculous. You go on and on and on, and until I eventually just went and got therapy for it. And you can get it under control. It never goes away completely, I don't think, but you can get it under control with what they call desensitization therapy. Like, they have you touch a table that you just watched be cleaned, and then you touch your mouth, and then they clean the doorknob, and you touch it and touch your mouth, you know, and they slowly desensitize you to all these things that you perceive as just beyond dirty, like nuclear radioactive waste dirty. You know, I used to have problems, like, getting through. I was at school and I was trying to get to my class, and the little handicap button on the door was broken. I couldn't get in because I couldn't get the door open without touching it with my hands. And my math teacher at the time, and she knew that I had OCD, she came by and she's like, "Let me open the door for you." And I was like, "Thank you." But now I can open the door. I just carry hand sanitizer with me.
So do we. We have about 5 bottles in our purses.
Yeah, we use our elbows a lot, too.
It does work.
And what's weird is ever since this OCD came on, I've had 2 colds. I used to get colds like twice a year. Now I hardly ever get them.
Upside everything, right?
Yeah.
Well, Jason, is your case being studied by researchers to try to figure out how to unlock, like, an ordinary, not that you were so ordinary, but an ordinary person's inner genius? I mean, you really have become a genius in math.
It's been amazing. That's what the functional MRIs are doing. They're isolating areas of the brain with people with gifts and everything. And then Dr. Treffert, his name's Dr. Daryl Treffert, he was the real Rain Man's doctor. Him and I were just in, Scientific American, there we go.
Oh, love that.
They talked about an implant that they're building, and you're going to actually be able to get an implant. If you've had brain damage, you can have an implant that'll help you regain ability that you have lost. And also, even though it's scary to some people, it's coming, upgrades, where you can literally get an implant to upgrade your brain. Say you're really bad at English or you have a really bad memory, you're going to be able to upgrade those things. Although, who knows when that'll be allowed, but the technology is here now.
Jason, would you trade your life today for the one you had before the attack? If you could turn the clock back?
There's just no way. Yeah, as much as, like, some days I do kind of miss that I call it ignorant bliss, you know, just that because I didn't care about anything and I didn't think about it, so you could just sit and enjoy the moments that you live But at the same time, it was very shallow, and I couldn't go back to it. And not only that, but since when I went back to school, I met my wife, and we just had our baby. So if I hadn't got attacked by those guys, this wouldn't have happened. I wouldn't have gone back to school, and my little daughter wouldn't be here. So I'd go back and literally say, beat me, please, you know, to make it happen again, because now everything is, like, perfect.
Well, are you working these days? I mean, besides writing a book?
Yep, I've been lecturing, writing a book, just talking at schools. I love talking at schools, kids. I'll be speaking at TED at Vancouver, the TED Talks.
Oh, fabulous.
Yeah, so it's going to be really great because I have ways to teach this. Since I didn't have any math at the time, I had to find layman terms to explain it in, which is why everybody understands it if I explain it, because if you want to explain the number pi and you really want to get technical on how it works, you have to have calculus 2 at least to learn it the way it's traditionally done. The way that I do it with a drawing, you can truly be a fifth grader and up, and you can get it.
I'm going to view your TED Talk when it comes out.
Yeah, it's going to be in there, and everybody will get it, because it really is simple. It's deceptively simple, but only when you see it. And in the equation, it's really tough, but when you see it, it's simple.
Well, Jason, real quickly, but we hear that your memoir is soon going to be made into a movie.
We are super excited about it. But Sony and Channing Tatum.
Which is a real hunk of a man.
Eye candy. Yes.
Do you look anything like him?
I don't know. I don't think so. Maybe when I was younger, I did. I used to work out all the time. And what's funny is when I was younger, I'm embarrassed to even say it, but for 8 weeks, I did that little Chippendale dancing thing in Alaska.
Oh, my gosh.
So if they want to do it, they'll be able to get Channing's shirt off, you know, in the movie and have it be true to the story.
Oh, that's so exciting. So when is the movie coming out? Do you know?
No, I'm guessing it's going to be probably 24 to 36 months, but it could be sooner or could be a little bit later. I'm not real sure about that. I'm still in shock that it happened.
Well, congratulations to you for sure.
Thanks.
Jason Paget, author of Struck by Genius, How a Brain Injury Made Me a Mathematical Marvel. Thanks so much for sharing your remarkable story with the Two Boomer Babes.
Thank you very much.
Do you have a spare bedroom, a finished basement, or better yet, a whole floor that's just collecting dust? Well, you may have an extra source of income right under your roof. More and more people these days are taking in lodgers as a way to bring in extra cash, afford a bigger home, or help pay the mortgage.
Joining us to talk about the hidden income inside our homes is Stephen Rosenbusch, who's covered this trend for the Wall Street Journal. Welcome, Stephen.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
So in a nutshell, how does this work?
Well, people have looked at their homes as a source of debt for years, and that, of course, reached really tragic proportions around 2005, 2006, right before the financial crisis. And, you know, as people came through the financial crisis, two things happened. One, the internet took off in ways that it hadn't really taken off before. The sharing economy became a big, big deal. And then also, you know, people's incomes were sort of going in reverse, and they needed more cash. And everything came together with the rise of Airbnb, which at first was really just about utility. It was about helping people who were traveling find cheap places to stay. And as that platform took off, suddenly people with homes realized that it could be an incredible marketplace, and it's just exploded from there.
So let's talk about the nuts and bolts and how this really all comes down. Can anything be rented out from a single bedroom or like a whole house?
You can rent out any amount of space in your home. The key thing is that these are supposed to be about short-term rentals, and it's really about owner-occupied housing. It's not about buying a second or third or fourth property as an investment property, and then just simply, you know, operating your real estate company online, because then you start to run afoul of regulations that govern the B&B industry and the hotel industry, and that's been a big problem everywhere from New York to the West Coast.
Okay, and then what about the length of stay? Can it be a night? Can it be a week? Can it be a month?
The answer to that really depends more on local regulations than it does anywhere else. So in certain cities, you can only rent out your primary residence. residents for a certain amount of time. And you have to know what those regulations are. And, you know, it's a big country, so the regulations vary. But, you know, common sense dictates a few days here, a week there, and it's fine. But if, you know, you start renting out, you know, if you start getting to the point where you would typically have a lease, you know, where you're measuring a stay in terms of months and not weeks or days, then you may have a problem.
And tell us about the sites that act as middlemen for these hosts and guests.
The site is really Airbnb. There are a few smaller sites, but Airbnb dwarfs everything else. There are millions of people making use of the site right now. And the thing that's really helped its growth is that it provides a lot of services for people. It makes it very easy. You know, if you're on the landlord side of the equation, you can use Airbnb to, you know, manage the financial aspects of taking in money. You can get a lot of free marketing advice and marketing services from Airbnb. And if you're on the user side, really simple, because the website works, you know, typically very well. You know, it's like using most, you know, any other, you know, really well-known, commonplace consumer internet app. And people just get it at this point.
So is there a fee to use the site?
The site takes a certain percentage of the transaction. So, you know, there is a fee, but it's kind of, you know, hidden from view. And if you're advertising on the site, a certain, you know, a few percentage points will go to Airbnb.
You're listening to the Two Boomer Babes, and we're talking about how ordinary homeowners can turn into temporary landlords and reap a potentially big economic upside. Our guest is Stephen Rosenbusch with the Wall Street Journal. Now, Stephen, I have to tell you that it sounds like a good concept in general, but to me, opening up my home to a complete stranger seems rather scary. And is there a way for the host to check out a potential guest before they arrive at the doorstep?
When I spoke to users of the site, they said that the thing that really gave them the confidence to move forward is that both the landlord and the renter are subject to review by one another. So, you know, the real identities are involved and reviews are involved. And that transparency really goes a long way toward weeding out troublemakers. But there have been plenty of stories about real problems on the network. And, you know, given the size of the network and, you know, just reality, you know, those risks can't be ignored, and they'll always exist to some extent. You know, if you're going to open your home to a stranger or run, you know, really any sort of business, you are going to take on some sort of risk. And it's really a question of minimizing that risk and taking on the risk that you're comfortable with. People have told me that they tend to develop a pretty good intuition for who's going to be a problem by interviewing them essentially online, exchanging a few emails. And, you know, if people are reluctant to comply with certain rules, they just don't go ahead with the transaction.
Right. But Stephen, say you have a guest, they're in your home and you didn't get bad vibes about them before they entered, but you are feeling very uncomfortable and you want them to leave earlier than agreed upon. Does the middleman like Airbnb, do they back you up in any way?
If there's a problem with a person in your home and you need them to leave, at that point you have to call the police if they won't leave. And that's happened in certain cases.
Ooh.
Although I can tell you that I interviewed a fair number of people for this story, and none of them reported any problems. And between them, they had taken in hundreds, if not thousands, of renters over the last few years, and they said they'd never had a problem. But that isn't to say that there can't be a problem. You know, in a population this large, eventually there will be.
Well, on the flip side, say for the guest, what if you book a place, and I am looking at someone who did and who used Airbnb, I believe, in the Southwest, and had a miserable experience. It was just a
miserable is putting it lightly.
It was a flea-ridden, awful place. Is there recourse for the guest?
You know, there's the rating system. That is the recourse. The mechanism for, you know, there's no real mechanism for imposing fines. You can always, you know, try and get your money back, but it's a tough thing to do. I actually know someone who had a problem with an Airbnb rental in France while he was on vacation. And, you know, the first night was an absolute disaster, and he simply canceled the rest of the reservation, you know, and was able to sort of extricate himself from that problem.
Right. Well, in full disclosure, I did get my money back, but it kind of ruined the whole weekend. But
that
Airbnb did make good.
I'm sorry to hear about that. There's no question that there's a certain amount of risk involved. You know, I wouldn't want to suggest that there isn't. But, you know, by and large, the problems, you know, are the problem cases seem to be, you know, in the minority.
Right. Well, Stephen, I'm curious about the time commitment for a host. Can you give us kind of a ballpark figure about the time it takes to really closely monitor and respond to inquiries from potential guests? Like, can we have a day job and still do this?
You can have a day job and still do it, although you need to be prepared to commit a significant amount of time to cleaning your home, making it presentable, making sure that, you know, they're just basic things that a guest would need, towels and so forth, on hand. So, you know, it's not something that you can just sort of, you know, forget about. But you could absolutely have a day job, assuming that you don't want Airbnb, you know, to be humane occupation, which for some people it is.
Stephen Rosenbusch of the Wall Street Journal. Now we know the pros and cons of opening up our homes to potential short-term lodgers. Thanks so much.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Bailey Chase offers a lifestyle of flexibility and choice that provides you new opportunities to experience your independence and enrich your life. For more information about the lifestyle Bailey Chase offers, visit www.integrace.org. Equal housing opportunity.
Up next, looking to update the outdated? That and more when the Two Boomer Babes return.
Emerald does it with cooking, Martha with gardening, and Jamie does it with decorating. Jamie Merida, that is, our own interior decorator extraordinaire. He's with us in the studio to tell us what's in and what's out in updating our home decor. Welcome, Jamie.
Good to be back.
All right, Jamie, we want to spruce things up. Let's begin with color. It is so darn confusing. Is dark in? Is light in? What's going on? Neutrals?
I don't know if I'd say dark or light, but I tell you, after coming back from the gift shows in High Point Furniture Market, the last couple markets, what you see a lot of is dark chocolate brown, which is sort of a very cool color that I've used a lot now with clients. I see a lot of coral and kind of hot oranges. And then the perennial favorite, blue and white, which, because of where my business is located, has always been a real popular thing on the Eastern Shore of Maryland. But I saw it pretty much everywhere, every showroom. You see it in all the magazines right now. And I think if I had to pick something that I would run with right now, it would be variations on blue and white.
Really?
Yeah.
So a deep blue, the sea blue, or are you looking at like turquoises?
The traditional ones you usually see are that really sort of strong kind of navy blue and white. But we've been doing a lot of plays on some sea blue, some gray blue with white. And I think the end result, every time we use it, it comes off as really calm, really cool and relaxing. And I actually just, I guess it was on the news the last week or so, there was some big research project that came up with the fact that when people look at the color blue, it calms everything about them. They did all kinds of testing, which I thought was really an interesting fact, and maybe that's why we're all sort of gravitate towards it.
Right. Well, you know, I just painted my house yellow, like every single room, and I heard that's the color of depression.
And I could kind of agree.
Oh, really?
I would love to redo my dining room, which sort of has that wine color that is like I'm done with, you know.
Exactly.
But yet it's a dark, long room. Mm-hmm. You've only got one light sort of coming in. So head to the blues, or is it too deep?
Well, if you think the room feels dark to you and that's how it's felt for a while,
yeah.
I mean, maybe you should make a big change and paint it a lighter color or a brighter color. Sometimes dining room's a great excuse to use wallpaper because you could do something really kind of bold, wild, over the top because you're not in that room
right.
a lot of the time. So it can be kind of a place to do something that'd be a little more adventuresome than something you want to see every day.
Oh, I'm going to do something wild.
Ooh, Kathy. Okay, so window treatments. I'm not really crazy, I have to tell you, about curtains. I think they're major dust collectors. But I do like my privacy. So what can I do that will add some flair without drapes?
I see you also mentioned shutters. And I think the last time we talked about window
yeah.
treatments, you talked about shutters. And I sort of
I love my
curled
shutters.
Up like, ugh.
Plantation shutters?
My problem is, I mean, windows are supposed to let in light. And the very first thing a plantation shutter does is make your windows smaller and darker and not quite so perky.
Jamie, you're bursting my bubble. My house is yellow and I have plantation shutters on every window.
So you just need to hire me and then I can come over and fix it.
All right. So if you can't use curtains and you can't use plantation shutters, what do you do?
What do you do?
We use a lot of products that like Hunter Douglas uses. There's some really cool like designer roller shades that aren't your grandmother's roller shade. They have a lot of products now like the Duets and the Silhouettes that can do a lot of things. They can give you a little bit of translucency when you want some light in but you want a little privacy. And then you can kind of flip a mechanism on the blind and they become totally like a blackout. So they kind of serve the purpose of protecting your view or giving you some privacy without really eating into your window space. And you can leave them up most of the time when you don't need them.
And what about fabric? Because that seems like that would soften it a little bit.
As a designer, of course, you know, the first thing I want to do to a window is put some window treatments of some sort, you know, whether it's panels or a top treatment. I think what you find now is the whole swags and jabos and fancy stuff is no more. Or, you know, the current trend. We do lots of very clean, you know, simple drapery panels on either side of a window with a rod because I think it's just sort of the current, fresh, updated look.
Sounds great. All right, big question, the big kahuna. How can we inexpensively update outdated bathrooms? I mean, for example, you know, the ones with like the turquoise tubs and toilets. Is retro in? Please say yes.
Don't you ever wonder how any of those people, when you those people,
yeah,
when
those
you walk
people.
In those houses and you think, how did they ever get convinced to do a forest green bathtub
right.
and toilet? And when would that ever have looked good?
Yeah.
But we all walk into houses and we probably live in houses with those things. And, you know, I think the house I'm currently living in, you know, my master bathroom was pink and black and I have a pink bathtub.
Wow.
Really expensive pink enamel bathtub. But I think one of the things you can always file away that you can do with those, especially if they're enamel, is you can always have them reglazed, which a lot of people think maybe, you know, they're not confident that that's a good solution. And I've done it for years with clients because sometimes I like the old bathtubs better than I do the new
right.
ones. And glazing is really inexpensive. And you can just have it, you know, glazed to like a pure white and it looks like a brand new, clean, fabulous, you know.
So how much is glazing?
Relatively inexpensive. I'd say a bathtub probably would cost you between $400 to $500
oh.
to have reglazed.
So, Jamie, finally, the holidays are just around the corner. Any ideas for some unusual gifts?
Well, you know, it's funny because I also have a retail store. And so part of, you know, a good percentage of my life is trying to figure out gifts and accessories for the shop. Little pickup gifts I tend to have fun with. And I think as, you know, most of the people we know and give gifts to really don't need anything. So always finding fun things like stocking stuffers. We stumbled across a company called Pinch last year that does these wonderful little boxes that are probably about 3 inches by 4 inches. And the one I loved was like a woman's emergency kit. And we could not keep them in the shop because they contain everything you might possibly need in an emergency in your purse, from, you know, thread to nail files to, you know, lip gloss to other things. But it was the perfect gift, I think, for the, you know, women on your list who you just wanted to give something to make them smile.
Right.
Another great company that we do a lot of business with is a company called Blue Q. And they're notorious for doing kind of funny gifts, which I think you've probably seen in my shop. You know, the notorious ones are the little bubble gum or gum packs that say things sort of like, I kissed a Republican and I liked it, or I kissed a Democrat and I liked it. And again, we find people always love to give those kind of things that make people laugh and giggle, which I think is a great little insignificant
exactly.
gift.
Exactly. And yeah. So what about any great ideas for a fun holiday centerpiece?
Yeah, I think we all get stuck in the rut that we just need a big bouquet of something or a big arrangement of something in the middle of the table. And I would suggest that perhaps you don't think of it as the center of the table and maybe do something that runs the length of the table. We like to do things when we do decorating homes for holidays and stuff, that especially on a dining table, whatever you wrap the napkin in, make sure it's something like it's a gift, a small gift that the guests can take home with them, whether it's an ornament. Last year we did one where we took beautiful red crystal ornaments and then just in gold pen. You know, left, you put the names of the people who were there and the date. So it sort of becomes like a commemorative thing that you can take home with you.
Very smart idea. I'm going to start planning my dinner party.
For 2016.
That's right. Well, Jamie Merida, decorator and owner of Bountiful Casual Elegance in Easton, Maryland, thanks so much for your always savvy decorating advice. Can't wait to get home and go to work.
Thanks, ladies. It's great to be here.
Imagine a world where ordinary objects do extraordinary things. Think forks that monitor your eating habits and toasters that tweet. David Rose, award-winning entrepreneur and MIT Media Lab scientist, is that kind of visionary. He believes that enchanted objects befitting Harry Potter's Hogwarts will make us all more efficient and connected in the not-too-distant future.
David lays out the vision in his new book, Enchanted Objects: Design, Human Desire, and the Internet of Things. He joins us on the phone. Welcome to the program, David.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk to you.
So what do you mean by enchanted objects? Can you give us some examples?
Absolutely. Well, today we're all staring into our cell phones most of the day, and I feel like the only way out of this conundrum is to spread the apps that we know and love that are in our phones into everyday things, into pens that know what we're writing, into jewelry that signals us about a loved one, into a wallet that knows how much you're spending, into trash cans, into furniture, into everything around us in order to make everything just a little bit smarter.
Well, let's talk about some enchanted objects that you've actually invented. And one is the Ambient Orb, which was so cool. And it just sounds like it belongs in Lord of the Rings or something like that. So can you describe that for us?
Sure. Well, this was inspired by crystal balls, which we've seen and in fiction and in Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz. We made a crystal ball at a company called Ambient Devices that could glow any color of the rainbow, and the colors helped inform you about whatever you cared about throughout the day. So it could be set to track the stock market, so it would go more green on a day like today or more red on days that are down, or it could track what the temperature is going to be tomorrow, or it could track the pollen count, or it could track whether the fish are biting if you're a fisherman, or it could track any data that you really want to sort of attend to out of your peripheral vision, without even your glasses on. And what we found is that people loved having this simple, glanceable view of data, and often it would actually induce a behavior change. So if they were tracking their blood sugar levels, if they were diabetic, they would take better care of themselves. Or if they're tracking the number of steps that they walked, they would be more likely to walk more steps, maybe because their family would see the data and would nudge them in that direction.
So, now, is this a ball that you look into, or is this kind of like a panel?
This is a grapefruit-sized frosted glass orb, LEDs inside that glow any color, and a little wireless chip inside that receives data from the internet. And so you can choose what you want to track, and it reflects that in a color that's updated every second.
Wow.
So you program it to say how many steps you have to carry around this grapefruit
No, it's designed to be it's designed to be a fixture in the house. So it sits up on your mantle or in your living room or on a desk at work. It's like a clock. It sits there and helps you understand what's going on in the world.
And is this something that you can actually buy? Is it available now?
I've invented a couple of companies since then, but the company still exists. It's called ambientdevices.com, and they focus now on helping energy companies to communicate to people how much energy you're using right now in your house and how much you're paying for energy, because there's some homes, some regions of the country where you have dynamically priced energy, so the price that you pay changes throughout the day based on the load that's on the grid. It's being given away by energy companies to help people become more aware of their energy, of their electric energy consumption, and it causes people to behave in more conservation-friendly ways.
Well, that's fascinating. Now, what about those glow caps, another enchanted object you invented? How does it work?
Well, this is an object that's designed to help the people, the 50% of Americans that are prescribed something by their physician to take those medications every day and avoid unnecessary hospitalizations and, you know, take better care of their health. So what we did was we took an ordinary amber pill vial, the way that meds are distributed in the U.S., and we made the cap smart. So it has a chip inside that knows if you've opened it, and it will signal you with light and then with subtle sounds, little arpeggios, doot-doot-doot-doot-doot, and then it will text you or call your home phone so you don't forget to take a med. And importantly, it will also send you an email every week that you can CC to a loved one. So I get my dad's data and he gets my data, and we can give each other sort of a social nudge or a hard time if we're in order to care for each other through this little bit of knowledge that we have now about each other.
And where are these available?
Those are glowcaps.com, and they're also being distributed. I think they're also on CVS.com and through Express Scripts, where they're just giving them out to people that have conditions like a transplant or diabetes, where it's really critical that you take your medication.
Wow. Okay, and then there's the Ambien umbrella, which is an idea I can sort of wrap my head around, unlike some of these other ones. So can you
Well, these are all, you can see, these are all taking computation or taking the same computer chips that we've had that have been in expensive machines and then in expensive cell phones or hearing aids or other sorts of everyday and embedding them in everyday things. So whether it's a coffee table or a medication packaging, the umbrella basically has a wireless chip in the where you hold the umbrella, and it knows what the forecast is for your zip code. And then if rain is forecast, it will make a little sprinkly pattern with little LED lights around the base of the umbrella so you don't forget to take it that day. But I like it because it really couldn't be simpler. You know, it's information in the object at the point of making a decision, and inspired by a fictional object, which was Frodo's sword. Remember back in Middle Earth, Frodo and Bilbo had this sword that would glow when orcs were nearby. So it was a everyday thing that anticipated its own use with just a little bit of magic. And in the book, I try to go back and forth between these fictional examples of magic and real inventions that are inspired by those fictional objects.
And that's one umbrella you sure don't want to lose.
That's right.
How much would something like that cost, David?
Well, when we invented it, it was over 10 years ago, and so it was relatively expensive. But the cost of putting a Bluetooth chip, which is the same wireless protocol that like the Fitbit bracelet that tracks your step uses.
I have one on.
Yeah, me too. So that the cost of that chipset is now less than $5. So if you're, you know, as an industry, the people that are making objects like luggage or shoes or jewelry are all thinking now about how to embed a little bit of information or a little bit of sensing into these everyday things.
You're listening to the Two Boomer Babes. We're talking with MIT Media Lab scientist David Rose about ordinary items that can do extraordinary things. He's the author of Enchanted Objects. David, there's also the Enchanted Doorbell. Now, how does that one work?
As a kid, my parents played this record for us when we were going to bed by Prokofiev called Peter and the Wolf, where every member of the story, like the duck or the bird or Peter, all have a different ringtone or different tune that's associated with them. So Peter is bum 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 bum, and the duck has a different tune. So we have a doorbell in our house that plays a different ringtone, a different sound signature for each member of the family when they're on their way home. So if they're carrying their phone, the phone sends a signal to the cloud or to the internet, and the internet sends a signal to the doorbell. And the doorbell, if they're 10 miles away, it plays one version of the tune. And if they're 1 mile away, it plays another version of the tune. If they're basically right just a couple blocks away from where we live in Brookline, in Boston, it will play another version of the tune. So you get this sort of sense of homecoming. It sounds like something. And, I mean, this is sort of what I wish for that the future of technology will bring, is more subtlety and more embeddedness and more of emotion and music and things that aren't, you know, annoying, buzzing, and beeping, and confusing, but things that sort of enter our lives in this more poetic way.
And where would one find that enchanted doorbell?
Well, so far that's just a prototype that's at the Media Lab and in my house, so it's not available commercially. But a lot of these internet-connected things, I think, if people are interested in learning more about where to find them, I would direct them to crowdfunding sites like Kickstarter or Indiegogo, where there are a lot of people that are experimenting and putting up internet-connected objects, and people can find a lot of examples on those websites.
David, do you have kids?
I do, yeah. I have two little kids.
Because they must think you have the coolest house. Their friends must want to come over all the time and see all these objects.
I actually built a product that's specifically for the six-year-old. And I live in Boston, and my parents live in Wisconsin, and I'm happy to have them connect as much as they're willing to talk to each other. But it was always a pain in the butt to connect them through Skype, because I'd have to get my laptop out, and I'd call them, and I'd say, open up your laptop, or get on the computer, and now we're going to do a Skype connection. And I just, Skype is such a wonderful, you know, video conferencing is such a nice way of having them connect. So I embedded that functionality into cabinetry. So in our living room, there's a cabinet that's just his height, and when he's in front of it, there's their cabinet in their kitchen glows, so they know each other is around. And then if they open the cabinet, they just have a dedicated portal to the other one, which is a nice high-resolution Skype connection. And it's a really nice way for them to, you know, interact more frequently and have, their own conversation and their own, you know, a stronger relationship because of the frequency at which they can chat with each other without me having to sort of mediate the conversation. So I'm very interested in how do you build these connections between people into, as we've talked about, packaging or tables or clothing or jewelry or even cabinetry in your kitchen.
David Rose, award-winning entrepreneur and MIT Media Lab scientist, this has been fascinating, and I want one of those umbrellas. Thanks so much for joining us.
Welcome.
Winter is upon us. Days are getting shorter. Temperatures are dropping. Since we're spending more hours indoors, we want our homes spruced up. Cozy, inviting. But if you're like us babes, you can use a little help. We turn to Sarah Knipe. She joins us on the phone to shoot the breeze about some cool new apps for winter decorating. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi, Kathy and Barb. It's always a pleasure.
Well, sunlight is such a precious commodity these days, of course, with the days really short, and we'd like to make the most of it in our homes. Is there an app that can help us do that, Sarah?
Yes, there is. There's a really great app called the Sun Seeker app, and you're able to see the path of the sun and a full calendar of when the sun rises and sets. And it uses augmented reality, which this helps you locate the sun even more efficiently. So if you're looking for the sun, this is the best one to get. And this app is a little expensive. It's $6.99, and it's available for iPhone.
Well, let me ask you how that works. You mean you don't just walk outside and look for the sun in the sky?
No, it uses the augmented reality, which is the high-level GPS kind of geolocator and a compass. It's really neat, actually.
But I'm thinking you could even rearrange your furniture to take advantage of the sunlight, right?
You can.
All right, so speaking of furniture, and since we're home, we finally have, you know, that time to do some of those to-do-it-yourself projects. Is there an app that can kind of help us with that or get us organized or give us some ideas?
There is. There's a handy app called Brightnest. And this app allows you to track what needs to be done around your house and keep up with routine maintenance. And it has a really neat interactive home quiz that you can take, and this allows the app to tailor articles and tips for your projects, and you can save and schedule your tips so you can use them later.
Sounds like a lot of pressure. Who needs the pressure, right?
Okay. So, Sarah, say we want to get new furniture for a family room, which I've been dying to do for about 10 years, and we're looking at some online options. So isn't there an app that helps us visualize how these pieces will look in our specific space?
Yes. There's a great app called the Home Styler app. And it's perfect for visualizing your interior design ideas, and you can see how furniture and decor products kind of look in your home before you buy them. You snap a photo of the space that you want to restyle, and the app actually transforms it into a virtual fitting room. So you can see how a rug or a painting would look, or a light fixture. It's really neat, and it's a free app for your iPad and Droid and your iPhone.
So this even works when you already have furniture in the room?
Yes, because the capability shows up in your app. So basically, it's restyling without having to do it virtually.
Okay, so when we want to kind of get out for a bit, there's nothing better than going to garage sales, oh my gosh, to find that bargain, just to spruce up a room. Are there any good apps, you know, to kind of make that adventure a bit more organized perhaps or easier?
There is. There's an app called the Yard Sale Treasure Map, and this is actually the original yard sale mapping companion app. And basically, you can quickly find the garage sales near you with this app, and it lets you access Craigslist too, the latest posting from yard sales on your mobile device. And the GPS feature makes it really easy to find the ones that are closest to you.
So how do they find that information? They just get it through, like, the newspapers and postings?
Mm-hmm.
And
it pulls the content in one place, so you're not having to go and Google different things, which is a really nice feature.
Huh.
And this is a free app as well.
So if you're looking for something in particular, can you also just put it in a search bar or something on that app? If you want to buy a motorcycle, say, can you put that in the search bar?
This is more specific for just finding general yard sales, but Craigslist does have that capability. Yes, if you wanted to find something on Craigslist, you could search motorcycle and it would come up.
Mm-hmm. No, I think with the yard sale, you just type in overall junk and then everything comes up. That's my typical garage sale search.
The crap we don't need in our house anymore.
Oh, but garage sales, there's nothing more fun than going to garage sale. It's like the ultimate treasure hunt. So, Sarah, are there any other cool decorating apps we should know about?
There is. There's one called Houzz, H-O-U-Z-Z. This is free, and this is also another one for decorating and sprucing up your home. You can browse photos by style and room and location, and then it creates a virtual idea book. So instead of sitting on the floor and clipping all those design magazines, this allows you to keep it all in one place. So it's a great resource if you're looking to remodel your house, etc. So, and that's a free app for your iPhone.
Sarah Knipe, our go-to tech guru, thanks so much for introducing us to some neat winter decorating apps.
My pleasure, ladies.
Bailey Chase offers a lifestyle of flexibility and choice that provides you new opportunities to experience your independence and enrich your life. For more information about the lifestyle Bailey Chase offers, visit www.integrace.org. Equal housing opportunity.
Support comes from Accent on Travel Rehoboth Beach with a Viking Rhine River cruise with us, the Two Boomer Babes. For questions and reservations, 302-703-6154.
And now it's time for us babes to give credit where credit is due.
Audio and technical guru Julio Gonzalez, who magically pulls it all together.
Webmaster wizard Gail Jane, who makes TwoBoomerBabes.com a fab place to visit.
Founding members of the Chicago chapter of the Two Boomer Babes Supper Club, Mike and Larry Israel, for your unfailing love and support.
Our husbands, daughters, family, and friends, even with smirks and eye rolls, who encourage us all the way.
And give us great material, often without knowing it.
Our moms and upstairs directors, Jane and Sally, who are cheering us on from their bridge game in the sky.
Our home away from home, Delmarva Public Radio. And to you, our listeners, for joining us each week and spurring us on.
Two Boomer Babes is a production of Two Boomer Babes Media in collaboration with Zimer Communications.